All right, 1 Corinthians chapter 9 and 10. We're going to jump into this. We talked the first week about how this was kind of a reset in the middle of 1 Corinthians. 1 Corinthians is a long list of things that the church of Corinth was doing wrong. And the first half of the book, Paul is going through the list. This is bad, this is bad, this is bad, this is bad. Second half of the book, this is bad, this is bad. And in the middle, he kind of resets everything. And he resets it in chapter 9, starting in verse 24. And he kind of says, hey, what's this all about? Straighten up. And he goes from verse 9:24 to 10:13. Let's go through that. Let's read that. Follow along if you would. Starting in chapter 9, verse 24. Do you not know that in a race runners run, but only one receives the prize? So run that you may obtain it. Every athlete exercises self-control in all things. They do it to receive a perishable wreath, but we an imperishable. So I do not run aimlessly. I do not box as one beating the air, but I discipline my body and keep it under control, lest after preaching to others, I myself should be disqualified. For I do not want you to be unaware, brothers, that our fathers were all under the cloud and all passed through the sea and all were baptized into Moses in the cloud and in the sea and all ate the same spiritual food and all drank the same spiritual drink. For they drank from the spiritual rock that followed them, and the rock was Christ. Nevertheless, with most of them, God was not pleased, for they were overthrown in the wilderness. Now these things took place as examples for us, that we might not desire evil as they did. Do not be idolaters as some of them were. As it is written, the people sat down to eat and drink and rose up to play. We must not indulge in sexual immorality as some of them did, and 23,000 fell in a single day. We must not put Christ to the test as some of them did and were destroyed by serpents, nor grumble as some of them did and were destroyed by the destroyer. Now these things happened to them as an example, but they were written down for our instruction on whom the end of the ages has come. Therefore, let anyone who thinks that he stands take heed lest he fall. No temptation has overtaken you that is not common to man. God is faithful. And he will not let you be tempted beyond your ability. But with the temptation, he will also provide the way of escape that you may be able to endure it. Lord, we pray that you would bless the reading and the preaching of your word. In Christ's name, amen. Okay, we've done that now. This is the third week. And every time I think, man, that's a long passage. But you know what? There's nothing wrong with reading the Bible in church. even though my brain is saying, man, we've been reading a long time. All right. First week, we talked about 9:24. It says, if you run, run like you are trying to win, right? Y'all remember that? You wrote that down. You memorized it. You've been working on it. You've been waking up every day for the last few weeks saying, before you start your day, I am going to be the best Christian that the world has ever seen, right? You run like you're trying to win. Last week, we talked about the first part of chapter 10, where he says, I don't want you to be unaware, right? I don't want you to be ignorant. These other guys in the Old Testament did all these great things. Nevertheless, they didn't make it to the promised land. They died in the wilderness. We talked about spiritual entitlement. Be careful. Let anyone who thinks that he stands take heed lest he fall, right? Take heed, right? Look out. Blepo. We talked about that last week. So all week long, you've been taking heed. And you've been telling yourself, I am spiritually bankrupt, right? Y'all been doing that, right, every day? They do their homework, right? You do your homework? Yeah, you do this. Speaking of them listening, Jeffrey is listening here from Hawaii. Hi, Jeffrey. How's it going? Hope you're enjoying Hawaii in February without us. Y'all give him a really hard time for that. So y'all been doing that all week, waking up every day saying, I am spiritually bankrupt. I have nothing to give to God. Every good and perfect thing comes from God. And fighting against spiritual entitlement. That was step number two. Okay, step number three, and this is where this sermon series really becomes work. So are you ready to do the work? Because we're going to start meddling, and I hope you're okay with that. I try to be a fairly positive guy. You know, I try to not bring the hellfire and brimstone too often, although that's Jesus talked more about hell than he did most other things, but it's not any fun. But the truth is, in this passage, we were given some things that we need to look at. Start in verse 6. Verse 6, it says, now he's talking to a church, and he wants them to learn these lessons. Now these things, and I'm kind of changing the order of my slides, so don't ignore the slides. Verse 6, now these things took place. What things? The things that he talked about in the first paragraph. Remember how we talked last week about the people coming out of Egypt and being in the wilderness and all of that. He said, these things took place as examples. Okay, you with me? We got to make sure we're attributing normal meaning to normal English words. These things are examples. Why? For us. Why? That we might not desire evil as they did. So he is about to give us a list of examples of evil. And we, if we're going to do what Paul really intended for the Corinthian church to do, for us to do the same thing, we have got to go through these examples one at a time and think about them. So we're going to be thinking about bad examples for a few weeks. All right? So let's not let that bring us down too much, but we're going to deal with what it says here. Now, first example, verse 7. He says, do not be idolaters. Let me see where my slides are. See where Bob is. There it is. Yes, these. Oh, look at you, Bob, figuring out Canva, getting it where it needs to be. Man, Bob does so much work up here, guys. I don't know that y'all know how much time he spends in that booth working on everything. He's just a man of many talents. And he probably doesn't like me mentioning his name so much in front of all of y'all. So Bob. You know, make sure and pat him on the back and tell him how much you appreciate him. These things took place as examples. The first example, it says, do not, verse 7, again, we're not giving any crazy meanings here. This just says what it says. Do not be idolaters as some of them were. As it is written, the people sat down to eat and drink and rose up to play. First example is idolatry. Now, when we think idolatry, we tend to think because, just our American culture, our American background, we tend to envision someone bowing down to a statue. That's not a wrong thing to think. But idolatry can be a little bit more nuanced than that. And the example that he is actually referencing, and you're going to need to turn to Exodus chapter 32. The example that he's referencing is Exodus 32, a story that you'll probably remember from Sunday school. What exactly is idolatry? As you really dig into what, 100 different definitions that I found, and they were all summed up with this. Something that you give your devotion to. Now, not like, was it yesterday, Valentine's Day? Not that, you're devoted to the person that you love and you gave them some attention. But the thing that your life is devoted to, the thing that gives you... Is this thing going in and out, Kyle? Do I need to grab my microphone or think it's a battery or what? I'll let you think about it. If it goes out again, I'll grab this one so y'all can hear me. Or I can just talk louder. I'll put that there for now. The devil works in sound systems. Not in sound guys. Sound systems. What are you devoted to? What gives you meaning? Like, what actually explains to you, what helps you identify in your life who you are? Now, in Bible times, that would have been a statue. That would have been a false god. That would have been something that they would place. They would go to that thing to have that thing tell them who they are. They would go to that thing and have them explain to them, this is your identity. This is what makes you matter. I had a friend, great man, actually passed of COVID a couple of years ago. He was a biblical archaeologist. And he had all these trinkets that he found, some pretty valuable. He had got a great museum that he had found in the Holy Land and Bible artifacts. And he actually had an idol, a couple of idols. He had one, we got to do it now here. He had one that was, y'all heard the word Ashtaroth from the Old Testament? It was an Ashtaroth, and it was like a little kind of naked lady that was kind of leaned over, and Ashtaroth was a sex god. We're not going to go into all that, but you envision these like large statues of people bowing down, and Ashtaroth was like handheld. You would like carry it around with you. You wanted it with you. You wanted your little false god with you. You wanted your little wavy kitty idol that most of you think about it, that, you know, you want that small enough that you could carry it with you. So imagine, let's just pretend, let's just time travel for a minute. Let's go back in time, 2,000, 3,000 years, and we are time-traveling aliens. We're just watching down from the sky, and we watch a culture who's walking around with these little Ashtaroths, not just Ashtaroths, there are many other false gods, but they would actually keep them with them. And they would go and they would pray to them, you know, kind of elf on the shelf style. That's idolatry right there, but it's a joke. They would keep it. They would say, "Hey, does this give me meaning? Does this give me purpose? What am I supposed to think about the situation that I'm in? Hey, false god, what am I supposed to think about this?" And they would actually be judged, like their status, by their false god. Like poor people would have one made out of like clay or, you know, a pottery. Really rich folks would have your silver, your gold, you know, your precious metals, and you would actually like know the person's status by the idol that they were carrying around. How do we view that culture? Walking around, thing in their hands that explains their status, that tells them what to think, that tells them who they are. What do we think about that? You have an Android? Gross. Don't we do that? Does this thing... That's my Star Trek. I'm a Star Trek nerd. I'm a Trekkie. This thing tells us what to think. This thing tells us who we are. This thing decides for us our status. This thing distracts us on the front row. This thing is like... Isn't that very similar? Now, I'm picking on this because I think it's a pretty good example. But this is just an extension of what Satan has done in our culture. Go back in time. Go back in time, not 2,000 or 3,000 years. Go back in time 50 years. I remember my pastor growing up. You know, I was late 80s, early 90s when I was when I was a kid. I remember my pastor preaching about the evils of soap operas. Everybody's sleeping with everybody. Yeah? Right? You ladies are staying home and watching this smut. And you know, I don't know why he made a big deal about soap operas. But when we were kids, some of us who are older than these guys, when we were kids, our preachers preached about the evils of television. And when you can find a time in history... In the early 1900s, when preachers were preaching against the evils of the wireless, that's a radio. Wasting your time listening to these stories on the wireless, you can find that. I have actually read about pastors in New England in, I believe it was the early 1800s, maybe the mid 1800s, it's been a while since I read it, who were preaching about the evils of a daily periodical. That's a newspaper. People can't handle that much gossip in their life to have a daily newspaper. Actual preachers preaching that from the pulpits. Like, and we laugh. We say, well, that's dumb. Like, newspapers aren't bad. Are we just the frog in the kettle here? Who doesn't know what I mean when I say that? It's okay. I want to make sure y'all know that phrase. The frog in the kettle. You take a frog and throw it in a pot of boiling water, it'll jump out. You take a frog and put it in a pot of cold water and slowly turn it on, it'll stay there till it cooks. Are we just the frog in the kettle? Because our TVs aren't cell phones. We're okay now wasting our time and letting TVs tell us what to think, but cell phones are bad. Well, let's go back in time. Maybe it was just the radio. Maybe it was just the newspaper. You know, I'm just picking one thing. There are all these things that we can make into idols that give us meaning, that we are devoted to. Look in chapter 32 of Exodus. So what's going on here? The people had come out of Egypt. They were in the wilderness. They were at Mount Sinai. Moses goes up on the mountain. There's thunder. There's lightning. Moses has been gone for 40 days. So let's not downplay this. Okay, let's not downplay this. If Mike says, hey, I'm going to go over here, and we don't see him for 40 days, we're going to be concerned. Okay, let's not downplay what they were feeling. But here's what's going on. When the people saw that Moses delayed to come down from the mountain, the people gathered themselves together to Aaron, that's Moses' brother, and said to him, up. I need to start a sentence with that. Up. Make us gods who shall go before us. As for this Moses, the man who brought us up out of the land of Egypt, we do not know what has become of him. So Aaron said to them, take off your rings of gold that are in your ears and of your wives, your sons, your daughters, and bring them to me. So all the people took off the rings of gold, earrings, nose rings, and all that. And he received the gold from their hand and fashioned it with a graving tool and made a golden calf. Like an actual baby cow out of gold. Okay, let's make sure we're all understanding what's going on here. A golden calf, and they said, these are your gods, O Israel, who brought you up out of the land of Egypt. Now it had been like less than 60 days since they came out of the Red Sea. Okay, hadn't been long. These are the gods who brought you up out of Egypt. When verse 5, when Aaron saw this, he built an altar before it. And Aaron made a proclamation and said, tomorrow shall be a feast to the Lord. And they rose up early the next day and offered burnt offerings and brought peace offerings. And the people sat down to eat and drink and rose up to play. That's the situation. Now, why did they make that false god? As I go through my memory, I remember being taught at some point, whether intentionally or unintentionally, that they were afraid, so they made a false god. But as I read it here, it doesn't say that. It could be that they were living in fear. They were at the foot of a mountain. There was thunder and lightning. They didn't know what was going on. They were terrified and needed a god to give them safety. It could also be that they were just bored. I like to camp. After a few days, I started getting bored. They'd been camping based... What was that? Did y'all hear that? Okay. It wasn't me. Okay. The way this microphone's acting, I didn't want it to be. What if they were just bored? They were at the foot of the mountain for 40 days, and they're like, you know what? Let's come up with something to do. What if the devil saw their boredom? Because up until this point, they had been very busy. They were slaves in Egypt. Up until this point, their days, their time was not their own time. Their time was filled. They were just bored. So it could be that they were scared. Could be that they were bored. I don't know. But what I do know is that the devil loves to fill a vacuum. And if we, as a culture, have a vacuum where we are either afraid or whether we are bored, the devil is going to fill that time with an idol if we're not careful. I cannot, and again, this is not pointed at anybody because I am guilty more than most. This has been a hard struggle for me to go through this sermon series because I know that I need to probably throw this thing in the trash. Let's think through right now in your own head. What's your argument for why you need a smartphone with full access to the internet and social media and everything? Why? Like, think through it in your head. Yeah. Well, that's how I communicate with people. That's how I do my job. That's how I do my taxes. That's how I get paid. That's how I check my email. That's how I read the news. And we start to kind of justify, right? We justify it. Are any of those worth the time that this takes from you? I don't know. Maybe I'm just bored, right? What if this were the year 1813 and you were living on the farm with your great-great-great-grandparents? What would you be doing with your time then? Again, if you take human history and make it a line this long, the internet, even TV and radio, is only about this much. For most of human history, our brains were quiet. For most of human history, we didn't, honestly, like, we didn't even have public libraries. Most people in their homes had a Bible. That's why people knew their Bibles so well, because that's the only book they had, and they read it, and they tried to read it. What if we're just bored? Has the devil put idols in our hands? What are some other idols? Idols that come from fear. What if these people were just afraid? What if it was just fear? I cannot, and I'm going to try not to go and just lose my mind on this sermon, but I think all of y'all know what I'm talking about. Our entire media industry is designed around fear. All of it. It's designed to make you afraid. Everything from the nightly news to the weather. Which one of y'all kids? We were talking about the weather the other day, I guess a few weeks back now. And you'll notice, like, the weatherman, how they'll say, like, tomorrow it's going to be above normal. The next day it's going to be below normal. And nothing's ever normal. Do you see that? Because instead of saying normal is between 65 and 72, they say normal is exactly 72.4. And so you start to believe that nothing's ever normal. Nothing's ever just okay. Oh, no, we're in a heat wave. No, it's just 2 degrees warmer, y'all. It's not that bad. Last night the weatherman said we had a 5% chance of tornadoes. I think they missed that one. I almost blew away last night. Like I said, even the weather is designed. Like, it's the worst possible crisis ever. The worst snowstorm, the worst ice storm, the climate's all, you know, we're all going to be dead in 12 years. Everything is designed to make us afraid. Oh man, these political guys. I'm so sick of politicians, y'all. I can't tell you. If I got to hear one more time, this guy hates President Trump. Like, good night. Like, they're all in, the whole world is designed to make you feel afraid so that you will fill it with an idol. You say, well, Pastor, I'm just political. I'm political. It's okay to be political. It's okay to have political opinions. It's not okay to idolize politics. Christians ought to be quiet. The world deserves to hear what I have to say. Nobody really cares what you say on Facebook. And if the devil told you that, I'm sorry. Nobody cares about the TikTok. The devil's just using that against you. We have filled our time with idols, either because we're bored or because we're afraid. And we've got to understand that this happened as an example for us, so that we might not desire evil as they did. What idols are in our lives? What in our world is giving us meaning? What are we devoted to? I did something weird this year that I haven't done in really my whole married life. I lied to Jessica when we were dating. I convinced her that I really didn't like sports. And then we got married and she realized I was going to watch sports for like 14 hours a weekend. It was a bait and switch, but you got to do what you got to do to marry up. You know, it just is what it is. This year, I don't know why. I didn't do it on purpose. I'm not putting myself out as some holy example because I know how much time I waste with idols. But this year, for some reason, I may have watched one whole football game. I don't know why. But you know what? You know what happened this year? Said I wasn't angry at how 19-year-olds that I'd never met acted on a Saturday. It was weird. I already know the Cowboys are going to fail me. I don't have to watch it. And yet, because I'm an American man, I'm supposed to race home from worshiping God and immediately get mad or sad or upset or anxious over a game. You know what I found? I don't know if I told y'all this or not. I'll tell you about the sports. Yeah. It was the early 1900s. There was a group of Associational Baptists got together and they passed a resolution that said, we hereby resolve that college and intercollegiate and high school sports are not of the Lord and are going to be an idol for God's people moving forward. And then here we are in 2026, and here we are. What do we have in our lives that are idols, that give us meaning, that give us meaning. When people look at you, what films, what filters do they see before they see Jesus? That person is sold out for that team. That person is sold out for that hobby. That person is sold out for politics. That person is sold out. You know, what are they seeing that you're devoted to before they see that you're devoted to Jesus? Now again, I'm betting nobody's ever asked you that question that way in relation to idolatry. But let me challenge you. When other people look at your life, what do they see that you are devoted to before you are devoted to Jesus? Oh, they love their family. A lot of people that love their family don't love Jesus. Can our families be an idol? Absolutely. Man, I've talked about teaching in high school the last 6 years, seeing some parents and how they just idolize their children and idolize their sports and idolize their grades and idolize, it's nonsense. My kids need to know Jesus before everything else. Do I do that well? I don't know. But I know the truth. You know, can we idolize our family? Can we idolize money? Of course. Absolutely we can. Do we? It's possible to have the highest paying job that anybody around you's ever had and not idolize money. It's not really about the amount, it's about the heart. Can we idolize something as silly as a sports team? Of course. Of course. Can we idolize politics? Of course. You realize we have a Messiah and his name's not Donald Trump? Even if you like him. It blew my mind how some people years ago acted like Obama was the Messiah on this side. But just as many people have, you know, they act like Donald Trump is the Messiah. He's not my pastor. I didn't vote for him to be my pastor. He's just a president. But he's just let's make sure we're not putting idols up. And I'm trying my best to poke every possible bruise I can today. Am I getting there yet? I'm trying to stomp on every single toe in the building today. Because that's the purpose. Because these things were given to us as examples so that we might not do as they did. If I haven't stomped on your toe yet, I'm going to keep trying. I want everybody's toes sore, mine included. Because I know that I tell my kids, I'm saying this out loud, I know that I tell my kids, hey, y'all don't need unfettered, constant access to the internet. And then I sit in my chair and I waste hours. But if I wasn't wasting on this, I'd probably be watching TV. Who lied to us and told us that an 8-hour day was enough? Who lied to us and told us, like, what would our great-great-great-grandparents think to know that we think we ought to be done by 4 o'clock every day? You know what I mean? God put us on this earth to be busy, to work. God put Adam and Eve in a garden. Gardening's hard work. Sometimes we seek out idols just because we are bored. Sometimes we seek out idols because we're afraid. If there's something in your life that is causing you fear, you need to acknowledge what that is and own it. And say, fear does not guide me. God did not give us a spirit of fear, but of power and love and a sound mind. And the only way we're going to do that is to turn the blasted noise off. Because you're not going to beat it. It's bigger than you. It's stronger than you. It's got billions and billions and billions of dollars behind it. If there's something in your life that's causing you to have too much free time, go do something. Go love your neighbor. What's our third tree? Service. Go do something. Don't sit around and come up with something for somebody else to do. Go do something. Go mow your neighbor's yard. Go take some lady in the nursing home flowers. Go, you know, there's no shortage of nice things you can do to fill your time. You know what? Just make dinner and don't go to Whataburger. You know, make yourself better. Find something to do. We have idols in our lives. What did Moses do? Now, this is a long chapter in chapter 32. God told Moses to go down the mountain and what they had done. I'm kind of flying through this for time's sake. Moses went down the mountain. God said, I just want to kill them all. Moses said, don't do that, God. That's a hard passage. We're not talking about the immutability of God today. That's an interesting other sermon, though. Eventually, God tells Moses, go and talk to the people. Verse 21. No, wait a second. Let's go back a little bit. Verse 15. Then Moses turned and went down from the mountain with the two tablets of the testimony in his hand. Just so you're aware, the Charlton Heston Ten Commandments, you know, that he holds like this. You know what I mean? It actually says in the Hebrew, in his hand, single hand. The way that ancient cultures would actually take notes and things, they would have them, they would inscribe them on stones about this size. He was probably holding both tablets in his hand. They were probably not much bigger than this phone. I've seen examples of like Akkadian and Sumerian tablets from my archaeologist friend. So weird little factoid in case you're ever on Bible Jeopardy. It was actually in his hand. Tablets on his hand. Tablets that were written on both sides. Not just the one side like you hang in all the courthouses, right? On both sides. Front and back. Verse 16. The tablets were the work of God and the writing was the writing of God engraved on tablets. Verse 17. When Joshua heard the noise of the people as they shouted, he said to Moses, this is the noise of war in the camp. But he said, it's not the sound of shouting for victory or the sound of the cry of defeat, but the sound of singing that I hear. And as soon as he came near the camp and saw the calf and the dancing, Moses' anger burned hot. He threw the tablets out of his hand and broke them, written by the finger of God. He threw them and broke them at the foot of the mountain. He took the calf that they had made and burned it with fire and ground it to powder and scattered it on the water and made the people of Israel drink it. How are we supposed to deal with idolatry when we find it? According to God's ordained example, we are supposed to burn with anger, burn it in fire, grind it into powder, and drink it. Whew, that's intense. Don't tell the joke about the fire in the circus, okay? That's intense. He got rid of it. Now, back to 1 Corinthians, chapter 10, verse 13. See if I can find that verse. I'm jumping ahead of myself. There it is. Boom, right there. No temptation has overtaken you that is not common to man. God is faithful. He will not let you be tempted beyond your ability, but with the temptation, he will also provide the way of escape, that you may be able to endure it. Now, what does this verse mean? We're going to come back to this verse every single week for the next few weeks. No temptation is overtaking you that is not common to man. What does that mean? That means you're not special. Despite what your grandma told you, you're not special. Everything your mom told you before you were 13, ignore that. We are all in this together. We have all experienced idolatry. We have all experienced this temptation. You are not alone. And the devil will tell you, hey, you've got idols in your life and you are all alone. You are a horrible, rotten person. Shouldn't you go hide in shame? You know what? No, you're not alone. I'm dealing with it too. So is Kathy. So is Heather. So is Greg. We're all in this together. That's why we have each other. No temptation has overtaken you except that is common to man. We're all in this together. Anybody else struggle with letting their phone dictate who they are and what their identity is? Just raise your hand. Am I alone in this? Okay, all seven of you. Okay. Anybody idolize sports and let that take up too much of your thoughts? Anybody idolize politics and let that take up too much of your thoughts? Anybody else have anything that they're devoted to that people see before they realize you're devoted to Christ? We're in this together and we need each other. So we've got to be sharing with one another. That's the importance of the second tree, small groups. That is where we go and share our burdens with one another. If you're not a part of a life group or a small group, you are missing out on one of the purposes of the Lord's church, which is to bear one another's burdens. These are the burdens. Okay, let's keep moving. God is faithful. He'll not let you be tempted beyond your ability. Now, what a punctuation mark is after the word ability? A comma. Now, most people read this verse and they put a period there. And you can get all over social media and you can see people's pictures where they say, God's never going to give you more than you can handle, period. The guy who wrote this verse was in prison when he wrote it. Okay? That's nonsense. God will give you more than you can handle. Because greater is he that is in you than he that is in the world. Because it is in your weakness that he is strong. God will give you more than you can handle, but he will not give you something. You will not be tempted beyond your ability. But, so what does that mean? But with the temptation, he will provide a way of escape. There are so many Christians, sad, broken Christians, who have been told that you have to learn to be stronger than your sin. You've got to overcome it. You don't have what it takes to overcome it. You didn't have what it took to get you saved, and you don't have what it takes to keep you in it. It's all the Lord. He's the one that gives you a way out. Your job is not to be stronger than the devil. Your job is not to be stronger than the sin just by sheer force of will. Your job is to find the way out that he provides for you. Problem is, we don't want to take the way out. We don't want to take the way out. The way out in Exodus 32 was, let's put this gold in a place that they can never make into an idol again. Think about it. Why did Moses make them drink that gold? They all had heavy metal poisoning for the rest of their life. Yeah, why? He managed to put that gold in a place where they could never make it into an idol again. He got rid of it. Maybe what we need to do is to take the way out. I remember when I was a kid, my pastor preaching against the evils of the video game Mortal Kombat. How the world has shifted. And to be godly, you should not play Mortal Kombat. Some of y'all my age are like, Mortal Kombat, really? Yeah. Finish him! We know, when, you know, blood and guts, and it was all gross. What if we don't want to take the way out? If you say I can't be trusted around alcohol, then maybe I need to never hang around somebody who's like that. Well, I enjoy those people. Well, if you struggle with it, get away from them, right? You know, maybe I struggle with too much time on my phone. Well, maybe you need a dumb phone. I can't have a dumb phone. That's what I'm going through in my own heart right now. How would I find a map? Nobody makes maps anymore. How would I get anywhere? You know what I mean? The devil has done a good job of ingratiating himself in our culture. How else would I be able to look up the internal temperature of a penguin at a moment's notice? I've got to be able to do that, right? I'll lose all my pictures. Yeah. If I'm not the one out there, you know, if I'm not the one out there pushing all that political stuff all the time, how will people know? You know, God set up Nebuchadnezzar. God knows what he's doing. It's your job to vote the way God wants you to vote. It's not your job it's your job to be promoting Jesus, not anything else. You know, we find a way. What if we're just not willing to take the way of escape that is provided for us? Maybe that's what we need to be doing. So many people fail at overcoming sin because they're trying to overcome sin. He doesn't ask us to overcome sin. He asks us to go away from it. He asks us to take his way out. And that's difficult. His way out leads us to places that look really weird in our culture. Do I really want to be that weird? Well, Peter said we are a peculiar people. All right, isn't that what he said? Do we really want to be that weird? Am I willing to be that teenager who, you know, I'm thinking about, you know, my teenagers over here, I'm looking at y'all. Do I want to be that teenager that doesn't have social media and who doesn't dress like a hussy? You know, do I want to be that? Do I want to be that guy who doesn't find all, I'm going to be the one guy who doesn't know who's in the Super Bowl? It's the Super Bowl. I mean, you know what I mean? Like, are we willing to take the way out? We got to be willing to pay the cost. We got to be willing to take the way of escape. He will give you more than you can handle, because you can't handle everything the devil has to throw at you. You're not tough enough, big boy. You're not. What he will give you is a way of escape. And it is your job to take that way of escape and change whatever needs changing to make that escape something you can stick with. I think about people who are going through like recovery ministry. You know, if somebody's going through a recovery ministry and they've been struggling with drugs and alcohol, they're not going to go to a birthday party at a bar. Now, is there anything wrong with going to a birthday party if somebody's having it at, you know, a bar somewhere? No, there's nothing wrong with that. Go party with your friend. But if you're struggling with it, you know, if somebody's really struggling with it, they're going to value their holiness more than their freedom. Now, it's okay to have that freedom. But they know in this particular instance, I've got to take the way of escape, right? What if the same is true for every other idol in our lives? What if the same is true for every other idol in our lives? Okay, have I meddled enough? Because this is exhausting for me, because I know that every one of these things I'm saying goes right back at myself. I'm not weird enough. I look too much like the rest of the world, just like y'all do. We're all in this together. This is not easy. But what I do know, without question, back in verse 6. Now, these things took place as examples for us, that we might not desire evil as they did. Who gave us this example? God did. Did God cause them to sin for the purpose of the example? No, that's not how that works. God did see fit that it be written down in a book and given to us. He chose what stories go in this book, and he chose them for a purpose. He chose these examples because he loves you. Second half of that verse, because he wants you not to fail. Ultimately, this is just a big reminder that God loves you. He loves you. And he will provide you a way of escape because he loves you. Not because he is keeping you from something, but because he loves you. And you've got to take that way of escape to understand that love. Jesus said, if you love me, you will keep my commandments. When you keep that commandment, you're taking that way of escape. And then you will be loving him. And whoever loves him loves the Father. We're going to start preaching a different sermon here. So, there's my meddling for today. Next week, tune in. Same bat time, same bat channel. And we're going to talk about sexual immorality. I'll go ahead and warn you. Whew. There's none of that in our culture, though, so it'll be a pretty easy sermon. No. As our musicians make their way up, I feel like every one of us has something to think about today. The Lord loves us. He doesn't want us to fail. And the first example that he expressly gave us is that we not be idolaters. That we not be devoted to something before we are devoted to him. If he's number 3 on the list, we've failed. If he's number 2 on the list, we've failed. Have no other gods before me. That's what he said. So maybe as we sing this last song, maybe this time of invitation, this time of reflection, there's that question. Take an actual inventory. When people look at before they see your devotion to Jesus. And let's figure out how to take that way of escape and remove that from our lives. Not an easy question. Lord, do what the Lord will do. Let's all stand together and sing.